we'll continue to do this. This isn't the last story. We're working on a series, and we're going to be speaking with people who want to speak about the truth, because I think it has a lot to say about the other wars that are happening right now around the world. And so we need to take those lessons from our own.
Matthew Akins, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine, New York Times investigation, America's Monster, and we'll link to your series. A fellow at the Type Center and also at the Radcliffe Center for Advanced Study. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Shrufa Bilkadus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alcock, Tamari Astudio, Ravi Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for Democracy Now!
Hi, I'm Jill Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Are you a fan of early rock and roll, doo-wop, rhythm and blues, and 70s rock? If so, The Roots of Rock and Roll is the show for you, and KBOO Portland is the place to be Friday afternoons at 3. Dale Farr will give you a history lesson from the birth of rock and roll through the 50s and 60s. And Ray Bodwell will mine the 60s and 70s for the deep cuts, hidden gems, and variety that you won't hear on generic classic rock stations. So tune in to The Roots of Rock and Roll, Fridays at 3 p.m. on KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon's only women's prison no longer has a gynecologist.
Portland City Council passes an emergency ordinance to purchase riot shields and less lethal munitions for cops.
And healthcare workers at Legacy Mount Hood vote to unionize.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 29th, 2024. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Reed Johnson. The only women's prison in Oregon no longer has a gynecologist on site. Coffee Creek Correctional Facility fired Dr. Linda Whiting in late April, this according to the Willamette Week. The prison has been under scrutiny for forcing women to wait months for specialized medical care. Earlier this year, there was a 600-patient backlog. A 2023 report by outside experts found that women in the prison were not having their medical needs met. In response, Oregon Governor Tina Kotek created an advisory panel to address those concerns. Why was the only gynecologist fired? Dr. Whiting said she was fired after protesting demands from her boss to do tasks other than take care of women at the facility. Coffee Creek is known to be short-staffed. Since the facility also does intake for the male prisons in the state, Whiting says she was asked to perform physicals on men as well. Whiting told Willamette Week, quote, "Women are not getting the care they need. They don't have enough providers. It's ridiculous," end quote. Coffee Creek spokesperson Amber Campbell said in a statement, quote, "Patients needing OB care are taken to a provider outside the facility. Currently, there is not an OBGYN provider on site," end quote. It's also not clear that the position will be replaced. The official statement said recruiting for the position was being reviewed.
A new Portland City Council ordinance will give over $1 million to the Portland Police Bureau for crowd control, training, and munitions. The council voted today unanimously in favor. Item 445 specifically authorizes the purchase of so-called public order shields and crowd control munitions, but does not specify what kind of munitions these will be. The previous incarnation of the police bureau team charged with public order, the Rapid Response Team, or RRT, voted to disband in June of 2021. That was after one of them, Officer Corey Budworth, was indicted for fourth-degree assault for striking a protester with his baton in 2020. The city and police have faced ongoing lawsuits stemming from their response to the 2020 protests. The city has paid over $1 million in related settlements in the last 2 years. The current ordinance language does not reference the mass resignation, instead characterizing the end of RRT as a dissolution or hiatus without giving any reason for it. Earlier this year, City Council approved incentives to recruit a new crowd control unit in anticipation of a tumultuous election year. The new unit has already been deployed several times to violently suppress student-led pro-Palestinian protests at PSU since April. During the RRT so-called hiatus, the city did not replenish its crowd control munitions inventory, according to the ordinance. Street Roots reports PPS still has over 10,000 less lethal munitions from 2020 purchases, the majority of which won't expire until next summer. Since riot shields and munitions are federally controlled items, their purchase must be approved by City Council, and the agenda item will be open for public comment.
Mysterious things have been washing up on the Oregon coast this month. First, it was balls of tar showing up on beaches as far north as Long Beach, Washington, down to Yaquina Head in Oregon. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife confirmed that tar globs were petroleum-based, which could mean they're from an unknown oil spill. At least 10 birds were found covered in oil by last week, and 3 later died. Anyone who touches the tar is advised to wash it off with soap or detergent. Last week, a dead humpback whale washed ashore south of Manzanita. Not terribly uncommon, but still a cause for concern given the tar balls floating around. State agencies say they'll decide what to do with the whale once they figure out how it died. And hopefully they'll rule out explosives. Typically, but not always, dead whales are left on the beach to provide food for scavenging birds. Most recently, this weekend, 20 people contracted a potentially deadly foodborne illness from eating mussels on the Oregon coast. This is according to the Oregon Health Authority. The illness is called paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP. The people who got it had been recreationally harvesting mussels near seaside. PSP has no known antidote, and it's the most common and severest form of shellfish poisoning. Symptoms come in around the first hour after eating. They include numbness of the mouth and lips, tingling, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and weakness. It can be deadly for children, but none of the people who fell ill over the weekend died. Some, however, were hospitalized. The health authority recommends that anyone who harvested shellfish in a similar area to throw the shellfish out. The warning does not apply to commercially harvested mussels or those bought at a grocery store or restaurant.
In more state environmental news, an amendment to the Northwest Forest Plan could come this summer. The U.S. Forest Service is amending the plan to address some of the current challenges for the region's forests, including climate change. Cable reporter Patches has more.
An update to the 30-year-old Northwest Forest Plan is expected soon. The plan has been a critical tool for managing 19 million acres of federal forest lands in Oregon, California, and Washington. In December, the U.S. Forest Service announced its intent to amend the plan, with the draft environmental impact statement expected for release this summer. Susan Jane Brown is the chief legal counsel for the Oregon-based nonprofit environmental law firm Silvix Resources. She says the biggest threat to forests when the plan was adopted in 1994 was logging.
Today, it is much more about climate change and drought and insects and uncharacteristic wildfires that are a threat to these forests. So we need to revise our expectations of how we're going to manage these lands.
Brown says the original plan came after years of clear cutting in the region's forests. The Northwest Forest Plan reduced logging by 75%. The Northwest has the most intact old-growth forests anywhere in the lower 48 states. Bill Gaines is the head of the Washington Conservation Science Institute. He says one threat to the region's forests is wildfires, and says the plan will have to find ways to address this.
We're going to need to use tools like manage wildfire, prescribe fire, and so the management direction is going to have to allow for those tools to be applied in order to hang on to some old forest into the future. It's a real challenge.
Brown says the new amendment has potential to help the region.
It's a really great opportunity that we have here to improve upon what was already pretty good to start with and to address not only the climate crisis, but also the biodiversity crisis, and to make sure that we include community perspectives and tribal perspectives that really just were not at the table the first time around.
For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Patches.
Workers in an Oregon hospital are celebrating their recent vote in favor of unionizing. More than 260 legacy Mount Hood healthcare workers voted to join SEIU Local 49. The union represents other legacy healthcare workers in the Portland area, including at Emmanuel, Randall Children's, and Good Samaritan Hospitals. Kathy Mitchell is a certified health technician at Legacy Mount Hood.
We wanted to form a union, stand up for our fair pay and respect. And not only that, my idea is I'm going to retire in 5 years, and I want this for future generations and future employees.
Mitchell says she and coworkers decided joining a union could help them get better pay. She points out that some of her colleagues work two jobs to make ends meet. A spokesperson for Legacy says it respects the decision and is committed to, quote-unquote, open, respectful, and productive relationships with employees, regardless of union status. Workers at Legacy Mount Hood have also been concerned about staffing levels. Mitchell says certified health technicians, or CHTs, working day shifts sometimes have 6 to 8 patients to look after, and night shift CHTs can have as many as 16.
Guess who suffers? Not only the CHTs, the patient care suffers. And so that was another focus for me, is the patient care at Legacy Mount Hood, so we could provide better care for our patients.
Next, the union will determine its priorities for bargaining and begin negotiations on its first contract. SEIU Local 49 represents about 15,000 workers in Oregon and Southwest Washington, including healthcare workers, janitors, and security guards.
Actor Robert De Niro joins Capitol Police officers to protest against Donald Trump at his New York hush money trial as both sides make closing arguments, and the Democratic Party moves to make sure President Biden will be on the ballot in Ohio. With more on those stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
When Trump ran in 2016, it was like a joke. This buffoon running for president. No, never could happen. We'd forgotten the lessons of history that showed us other clowns who weren't taken seriously until they became vicious dictators.
Actor Robert De Niro joined former Capitol Police officers in denouncing former President Donald Trump outside the courthouse where Trump faces 34 counts for covering up hush money payments to a porn star. De Niro will appear in campaign ads for President Joe Biden and attack Trump for what the actor called a coward's violence when inciting a mob to attack the Capitol on January 6th. The former president's campaign fired back that De Niro's speech is the act of a desperate and pathetic campaign. Trump campaign press secretary Caroline Leavitt said Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's case is a witch hunt.
This case would have been laughed out of any other courtroom in America. Legal scholars on both sides of the aisle, even liberal legal scholars, agree there is no crime, there is no case.
On the first day of the trial, Trump's campaign raised more than $1.5 million and has gotten sizable donations since. But the former president's son, Don Jr., accused the Biden campaign of profiting financially and politically from the case. Mirroring a key argument lawyers made in Tuesday's closing arguments, Don Jr. attacked witness Michael Cohen as a liar.
It is an insanity. It is an embarrassment. It's an abomination to democracy and to our republic. And yet it continues.
In its closing arguments, the prosecution said the statements of Trump's former fixer are confirmed by the porn star payments paper trail. Meanwhile, President Biden will appear on the Ohio ballot after all. The Democratic National Committee will nominate him through a virtual roll call vote ahead of both the official convention and Ohio's ballot deadline. Lawmakers moved the state deadline for previous candidates but refused this time. Michigan legislation would establish gun-free zones in the state capitol and other government buildings. Two Senate bills would exempt lawmakers with concealed weapons permits, but could mean a 90-day penalty for others. Ryan Bates is with End Gun Violence Michigan.
We cannot have a functioning democracy at the barrel of a gun. So it's incredibly important that we protect our legislators and protect our democracy from people who want to do it harm by bringing guns into the places where our laws are made.
The open carrying of guns in the Michigan capitol was banned a week after the January 6th attacks. The Biden administration is expanding health care coverage for those in the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. Aline Yoriko Badillo Carrillo, with Voices Jackson Hole, is a DACA recipient who says this will be good for the places where they live.
Not just for me, but I think it's a communal benefit. If I have access to preventative care and access to medical care, then I'll be able to be healthier, and then I'll be able to help others also.
Mexico City could run out of water by the end of June. It's seen decreased rainfall due to recent El Nino weather, but the massive urban area has longstanding infrastructure and water management issues. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots about his latest article detailing Portland City Council's emergency yes vote to allow police to buy new riot gear and munitions. At 6, it's For the Wild. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be mostly clear with an overnight low of 49. Tomorrow's weather, sunny with a high of 70. Today in history, in 1953, Edmund Hillary and Sherpa Tenzing Norgay became the first people to reach the summit of Mount Everest. The quote of the day is from Norgay, who said, quote, "I have climbed my mountain, but I still must live my life."
The president of the Navajo Nation is addressing the sexual harassment accusations made against him by Navajo Nation Vice President Rochelle Montoya. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin is disputing sexual harassment accusations made by Navajo Nation Vice President Rochelle Montoya against him. In April, during a live stream on social media, Montoya publicly said she was harassed and bullied during a meeting, but did not name the alleged harasser.
In the month of August of 2023, I had to write a statement because I was sexually harassed.
During a press conference Tuesday, Nigrin revealed the allegations were against him from a meeting in his office with Montoya. Nigrin repeatedly disputed the accusations.
I never sexually harassed or sexually assaulted the vice president or have disrespected her or have done anything she's accused me of doing.
Nigrin says he asked the vice president to meet with him because he learned her marriage was ending and wanted to offer support. In a written statement to the office of the president, Montoya said the meeting made her feel uncomfortable and that she felt objectified. Montoya said she felt powerless, alleging she tried to leave Nigrin's office multiple times and was told to just sit there and was hugged as she left. During the press conference, Nigrin acknowledged the hug, saying he put one arm around Montoya's shoulder and gave her a partial side hug to show support, but did not denies any wrongdoing. Nigrin says he wants the vice president to join him in a peacemaking session to address the issues. Meanwhile, an investigation is underway. The Alaska Federation of Natives has rolled out plans for its October convention in Anchorage with a program dedicated to an up-and-coming generation of Alaska Native people. KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports.
The theme for this year's Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, Our Children, Our Future Ancestors.
I think that it will be a very unique convention and also very forward-looking.
AFN President Julie Kitka says this gathering will take up the Way Forward report produced by a National Commission on Native Children named in the memory of two late elders, Alice Spotted Bear, a Great Plains tribal leader, and Walter Sobolev, a Thlinkit scholar and religious leader from Southeast Alaska. Both were passionate advocates for Native children. Sobolev, who died at the age of 102, often encouraged young people to, quote, take care of the older person you are going to become. Kitka says the commission's report was sent to President Biden and Congress in February and makes many recommendations that deserve a thorough review at the convention.
We can improve things for our children. not to be satisfied with the way things are.
After 33 years, this will be the last convention Kitka will oversee as president. Although she announced her decision to step down earlier this year, Kitka says she was both surprised and honored to be asked to deliver this year's keynote speech.
Time is right for change, and I view the transition at AFN as an opportunity for someone new to step in and shoulder the responsibility and bring a whole new set of ideas and way of doing things. This is part of the process. It's good.
Kitka says the AFN board plans to select her replacement before the convention, so it's likely the new president will also address the gathering. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Dakota News Now reports that South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem announced Tuesday that the state will host a tribal public safety crisis summit. The summit is expected to take place in Pierre in June. The announcement comes amid tense relations between the administration and tribal governments. A number of tribal governments located in South Dakota have banned Noem from their reservations. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The United Auto Workers Union continues the fight to add workers at two Alabama Mercedes-Benz plants to its union rolls. Despite losing the union election by a narrow margin this month, the UAW has accused the automaker of misconduct and is seeking a new election. The union has filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, alleging the company illegally intimidated workers into voting against the union. Here's UAW President Sean Fain.
This company engaged in egregious illegal behavior. The federal government and the German government are currently investigating Mercedes for the intimidation and harassment that they inflicted on their own workers.
The objections are being reviewed by the regional director of the NLRB, who has the authority to order a hearing. If it's determined that the employer's actions influence the election, a new vote may be ordered. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey has said the plant workers have made their voices heard and that the UAW should respect the outcome. Ivey and other southern governors have opposed efforts to unionize, saying direct relationships between workers and employers foster better work environments. In the recent publication Labor Notes, Mercedes worker Jeremy Kimbrell outlines allegations of union-busting activities, including sending anti-union messages, holding so-called captive audience meetings, and playing anti-union videos. Despite the loss, Fain acknowledges some victories achieved through the union's campaign. He highlights pay increases secured through the UAW's efforts, the elimination of wage tiers, and the appointment of a new CEO. However, Fain thinks more can be done to improve working conditions at the plants.
It's about getting our lives back, getting our times back, and having dignity on the job. And the only path to do that, the only vehicle for that, is with a union contract.
Following last year's victories at Ford, GM, and Stellantis, the UAW has pledged $40 million to focus on organizing efforts in the South. In the meantime, Governor Ivey signed Senate Bill 231 into law, which mandates that unions can only be formed through secret ballots. Companies that voluntarily recognize unions without the secret ballot risk losing state incentives.
A new World Wildlife Fund study shows that since 1970, more than 80% of global populations of freshwater migratory fish have declined significantly. The report calls developments in Living Planet Index distressing and faults habitat loss and degradation. It says factors like river fragmentation due to dams and agricultural encroachment account for half of the threats. Michelle Thieme monitors freshwater species for the World Wildlife Fund and says that the trend is heading downward, but there are efforts underway to save these species.
On average, we've seen freshwater migratory fish populations in North America decline by 34% since 1970. This is a little bit lower within what we're seeing globally, but it's still not a good number.
The Living Planet Index follows more than 1,800 populations of 284 native migratory freshwater fish species from around the world. Team says these fish often make the difference in food security and nutrition for vulnerable communities while supporting the livelihoods of millions in local and recreational fishing industries and global trade. Team says despite the bad news, she is heartened by efforts to reverse the trend. Last month during Earth Week, state, tribal, and local leaders from across across the country gathered for a White House water summit. At the event, the Biden administration announced a freshwater challenge, part of its America the Beautiful initiative to conserve and restore America's rivers, lakes, streams, and wetlands.
We're very excited that the U.S. government has taken such a leadership role in setting the specific target of restoration of rivers and other freshwater habitats. But that's really going to be critical for our time, the population of freshwater species to rebound.
Team says more than 100 inaugural members, including her organization, have signed on to support freshwater restoration in communities in seven states, with eight Native nations and 24 local governments.
Officials expect the Port of Baltimore to fully reopen by mid-June, and advocates are renewing their call for the Biden administration to issue an executive order to decarbonize the maritime shipping sector. Recommendations include setting new fuel standards, eliminating import emissions, funding the electrification of ferry and harbor craft fleets, as well as supporting U.S. shipbuilders in developing low and zero emission marine vessels. Brett Pivido reports.
With the Port of Baltimore nearing a return to full commercial operations, advocates are renewing their call for an executive order to address maritime shipping emissions. Last year, 45 environmental groups sent a letter calling on the Biden administration to decarbonize the maritime shipping sector. Included among their recommendations was eliminating in-port ship emissions by 2030, with one approach to connect ships to shore power while docked. Antonio Santos with the nonprofit Pacific Environment says reducing emissions is not just about climate change.
As you're reducing emissions, you're also protecting those directly impacted. And when we talk about where these ships tend to congregate, it is port workers and those frontline communities, those port-adjacent communities that are directly affected.
Since the collapse of the Key Bridge, researchers from the NOAA Air Resources Lab have been taking samples in the Curtis Bay neighborhood to eventually assess the impact of the closure of the Port of Baltimore on local air quality. The letter also calls on the administration to fund the electrification and quieting of the U.S. federal ferry and harbor craft fleets, as well as supporting domestic shipbuilders to build low and zero emission marine vessels. Advocates are also making the case that the administration can use existing Clean Air Act authority to establish a goal-based fuel standard for ships entering U.S. ports. Santos says advocates recognize that ports are hubs of economic activity, and attempting to protect the environment does not mean ignoring economic considerations.
We can have a good economy and we can also protect the environment. And a lot of these recommendations that were in our letter and put in front of the White House include provisions that will create good paying union jobs.
Estimates indicate if shipping were a country, it would be the world's sixth largest greenhouse gas emitter. For Maryland News Connection, I'm Brett Pivito.
This spring storm season has been a tough one for residents across the state of Texas who have experienced everything from damaging wind and hail to flooding and deadly tornadoes. When natural disasters occur, volunteers with the nonprofit Texans on a Mission head into the disaster areas to help people put their lives back together. Freda Ross has more from Austin.
Residents of North Texas continue to clean up after the latest in a string of deadly tornadoes. According to the National Weather Service, an EF2 tornado with wind speeds of 135 miles per hour killed seven people and injured more than 100 others in Cook County. It's just one of a series of dangerous weather events across the state in the last several weeks. Texans on Mission, a faith-based nonprofit formerly known as Texas Baptist Men, assists victims worldwide after a disaster. The organization's John Hall says crews are spread out across the Lone Star State.
Right now, we are serving in multiple locations in Houston after the high wind storms down there. We're serving in two locations in San Marcos after tornadoes down there. We're serving after the flooding in southeast Texas. We're serving here after the tornado up in far north Texas.
Hull says because of the number of recent severe weather events in Texas, they are short on volunteers. So the organization is receiving assistance from partner groups in Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, and North Carolina. At least 200 homes and businesses in North Texas were destroyed by the tornadoes. Governor Greg Abbott has extended an existing disaster declaration to include Denton, Montague, Cook, and Collin counties. The declaration makes the regions eligible for additional funding under FEMA's Public Assistance Program. Hull says when volunteers arrive at a disaster scene, residents need basic necessities.
We'll bring in mobile shower laundry teams to give people access to shower and laundry services. We'll bring in mass feeding teams. And then often we bring in chainsaw teams that will take out the large trees that have fallen on people's cars and their houses.
He says the volunteers remain in the impacted areas for several weeks after a catastrophic event. Hull says over the past year they have responded to disasters on six different continents. For Texas News Service, I'm Deborah Van Fleet.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 29th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, tips, units of pi, dream interpretations at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Ken Jones and Patches. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Antonio Gonzalez, Frieda Ross, Brett Pivado, Eric Tagadoff, and of course, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is, of course, Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
Yes, you are. And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, and gosh, why wouldn't you? You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth, and have a great night.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm speaking with Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, about his latest article, co-authored for the paper this week. It's called PPB Asks City Council to Authorize Emergency Less Lethal Munitions Purchase Despite Existing Stockpile. Announced before holiday weekend, emergency ordinance skirts transparency, authorizes PPB to bolster shields and munitions inventory. Welcome to KBOO News in Depth.